Living Our Breast Lives, episode 14, a podcast not only about two women thriving with metastatic breast cancer, but also self-love, appreciation, and overall awakening to this beautiful gift we call life. Each episode, we will be focusing on a different theme that will highlight each episode. Please don't forget to not only tune in, but to also subscribe and review. Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. My name is Ren, and today I will be hosting an interview for all of our beautiful listeners. Okay, so let's get into it. So I recently had someone reach out to me whose mother-in-law was just diagnosed with breast cancer. This is exactly what led to me wanting to do today's episode. And today is quite the special episode because A, we have a brand new guest on today's podcast, and B, you know what? I think it's that time to focus a little bit more on the mental health struggles that may come with a breast cancer diagnosis, whether early stage or late stage. So as you know, I've had the pleasure of experiencing both sides, lucky me. Struggling with mental health, it's very common for a lot of people, especially those experiencing a diagnosis. Maybe you have someone close to you, whether it's a friend, cousin, aunt, grandma, whoever it is that's going through breast cancer treatments, and you just want to know how to be there for them, or even just gain a better understanding of what it is that they're going through. Maybe you have the BRCA gene and you want to know more about the process in case you ever find yourself in the hot seat. Maybe you're the one currently going through it and you need some validation or support. It's really hard to know exactly what someone you love and care for is experiencing and feeling when it comes to mental health during an experience like a breast cancer diagnosis. And so that is why I decided to bring a badass psychologist onto today's episode, but also more importantly, my very good friend, Mary. So welcome, Mary. I am so happy to have you on today's episode.
Thank you, Ren. I love your podcast. I'm so glad you're doing it. It's so helpful to so many women.
Yes, we are so lucky to have you here today. So before I give Mary the floor to introduce herself, I want to take the time to share how Mary and I met. So long story short, when I was first diagnosed back in 2018, Mary and I became very fast friends while actually sitting across from one another in the treatment room. Yes, we were both having chemo for early stage breast cancer. First off, let me just say, finding a friend like Mary on your worst days at the infusion center was, a gem that I didn't know that I needed. We talked so much that before I knew it, it was like treatment would be over. So after some time, one thing led to another. And the next thing I knew, she was telling me about this surreal opportunity to save my hair using a technique called cold capping, which is actually what she used to save her hair. And I can't speak for everyone, but the thought of not having hair was, debilitating. So I, my mindset was I'm going to give it a go. Like whatever I can do to try and save it, I'm going to go for it. And at the time, Mary was actually the one who was advocating for the cold capping. And so I thought, well, if it worked for her, then it can work for me. Oh, God. Well, Mary, how did that go for me?
Well, I'm glad you're talking about it on this episode, too, because the mental health is a huge piece of it. And I think that what I didn't expect, and I don't think you expected either, was the anxiety of I think that you described it as just a claustrophobic feeling, just the anxiety from the cold, something that I actually didn't experience. And so it really opened my eyes to, wow, this experience is bigger than I just thought, stick the cold cap on my dumb head and be done.
Isn't it crazy that different people have such different experiences with so many different things?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And with the manual cold capping, a lot of people have anxiety about, will my ice, melt? Who's going to help me take the caps off? Will they allow me to bring all this stuff in? But I think that in the beginning, and by the way, cold capping has been around for 30, 50 years. So this isn't a new concept.
Yeah. And for those that are like, what in the world are they even talking about? I want to give you the floor, you know, to really dive in and explain what that is, because who knows, like somebody on this podcast who may or may not have been diagnosed early stage breast cancer, I mean, maybe they want to, you know, give it a go. Now, in my experience, sadly, cold capping, I mean, it was a failed experience for me, and I can touch upon that later. But more importantly, like, I feel like I gained such a beautiful, like, supportive friendship out of it. I love you very much. And so, yeah, it didn't, you know, it didn't work for me in the end, but look who I gained in spite of it. And I'm going to say this, I've also got a badass video, you've seen it, Mary, of me shaving my head. I may or may not, you know, work up the courage to post and share to our Instagram later, but stay tuned. So guys, without further ado, let's have our listeners meet Mary Lacey. Go ahead, Mary, tell us about who you are and maybe start out with kind of, you know, explaining to us what cold capping really is.
Yeah, great. Okay, so my name is Mary Lacey. I am actually a behavioral health doctor, so I'm in private practice and have been for, gosh, 20 years probably, maybe more. Well, actually a lot more. Wow, anyway. So I was diagnosed in November of 2017, and it was stage one, thank God. And my issue was my mother passed away with cancer at the same age, with her children being the same age that my children were. And so for me, it was an immediate trigger. And the first thing that popped into my mind, strangely enough, was remembering that day when my mother lost her hair from chemo. And, you know, as a kid, they tell you everything's going to be fine. She's just sick. We're going to beat this, you know, and but nothing prepares you for seeing your mother without hair. And that hair sounds just so frivolous, but it's very shocking, and it left a really big mark on me of just trauma, that just the trigger of her not having hair. And so my kids were still school aged, and I wanted to make sure that if I could, that that would be something I could not have them go through in the way that I did. I just remember it in a child's eyes. That's so scary. So actually, Dr. Turk, who was both of our surgeon,
Shout out Dr. Turk.
He told me about this cold capping, and a woman who had done it prior to me and had created a foundation because it worked so well for her. And so I looked into it and quickly found out that cold capping, or scalp cooling is another name for it, is insurance companies don't like it. They won't pay for it. They won't support it. And which was really strange to me, because they were offering me $1,000, $2,000 for a wig, but nothing for cold capping, which infuriated me. So I was lucky enough to have the resources to pay for it out of pocket. I believe it was $400 per session, and I had to do 12 sessions. So it's a substantial amount of money. I fortunately was able to afford that and didn't think much of it after that. So I get into the treatment room, and the cold capping is it's almost like a swimmer's cap that you put on your head, but it has like veins or fingers that run all through it that circulate freezing cold water, icy cold water. And while you're wearing it, if you're lucky enough to find a DignaCap machine in a facility, which there was only one in Charlotte at the time, and now none, which is very sad. We'll get to that later. But if you can afford that, all you do is sit there. And, you know, the first 30 minutes is a bit uncomfortable. It gets it right down to just about frostbite. And so it's uncomfortable. But then after 30 minutes, your head kind of goes numb, I want to say. And, you know, then I ended up falling asleep a lot of times because of also the Benadryl that was in the drip. But in any case, as I'm looking around, in the chemo ward, or gosh, that sounds horribly and harsh, but I'm seeing all these other women getting chemo with no hair. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? Turns out they couldn't afford it. Mm. And that made me physically sick, that if you don't have enough money, you can't afford your hair. Mm-hmm. It's just gross. So that later started my lobbying of insurance companies and trying to get it covered, which now it mostly is, but it's hard to find machines. But anyway, so there's also manual cold capping where you rent the equipment. Julia Louis-Dreyfus did this. Christina Applegate did this. A lot of celebrities have done cold capping. You just don't know it because they didn't lose their hair. So you can rent cold cap, the cooler, the thermometer, and all of the accessories that go with it from companies like Penguin. You can Google that and find there's many companies that are in this business now. In any case, I used the DignaCap machine, which the cold capping process, and I was able to keep 90% of my hair. In fact, I just had one small bald patch on the top where there happened to be a bubble in the hat, and it wasn't actually fitting flush against my scalp. And so it was just proof that without this cold cap, I would have been completely bald. For some people, it's totally fine. For me, and the reasons I told you from my past and my mother and my children, it was important to me. But for some people, I think they feel empowered.
Yes.
With their hair loss. And yes. That really strengthens their lioness approach to the entire cancer diagnosis.
You know, the first time I lost it, I was trying everything that I possibly could to save it. It was just kind of like a femininity thing for me. It was just, it was all I knew, you know.
Well, hair was down to your waist.
Yes, I had very long hair. And then the second time, at that point, I said, screw it. And it was an empowering moment for me. And that was why I videotaped it. And I remember the clip of me doing it made its way onto the news. But I definitely felt empowered. And I said, you know, I'm going to shave my head first before, you know, this diagnosis can just take it from me. There's something very empowering of being the one in control. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember being so excited for the thought of keeping and maintaining my hair. But like you said earlier, I mean, I think I tried about 3 or 4 treatments, and before I knew it, it wasn't even a physical thing anymore. The DignaCap became such a mental struggle for me, like you had said, the claustrophobic, and almost just like this epiphany came over me, like this isn't for me, and what's meant to happen is going to happen, and I just need to kind of let things take its course. And so, you know, instead of fighting it, and continuously putting myself through that agony, I stopped. I lost it. It grew back. And, you know, here I am today, because at the end of the day, there are some people that will say hair is just hair. And there are some people that hair is everything to them. And everybody is different. It's just everybody has their own journey. If there's anybody that's listening that wants more information on cold capping, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram. I will absolutely send your information to Mary.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to anyone. And you can put my email address too as well and ask me anything. I'm still mentor people, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 at a time. And so I'm happy to do it.
Yes, she's a huge advocate in the DignaCap world, cold capping world. So I would definitely jump on that opportunity. And she's also a good person. So either way, you win. So a question that I wanted to ask you, Mary, is so you've mentioned that you are a psychologist for many, many years. Would you say that being a psychologist helped you tremendously when you were first initially diagnosed? Like, was the coping any easier for you because you had those previous skills?
You know, that's a great question. And a lot of people have asked me that. And I think that what people don't realize is therapists need therapists. Because when it's your own, are we allowed to cuss on your show?
Yes.
when it's your own shit, you can't see it. Right? You can't see it. And you've got all the training and you've got the skills and you know what the book says. But when it's you, you are a human being. And it's very tough to apply the same advice or knowledge to your own struggles than it is to offer to a patient.
Wow, that makes total sense.
Yeah, it's hard to see, you know, so therapists do need therapists in order to say, hey, let's look at this. What's going on here? And, you know, I believe in therapy and I've been in therapy and my children have been in therapy because again, sometimes you can't see your own stuff.
Yeah.
So while I've had the skills, it's hard to apply them, especially in a life or death situation like this. The shock, the trauma of it all, it does wane down and you are able to find some of those skills.
Even the component of telling your children, you know, I haven't experienced that. I don't have kids, but nobody teaches you how to have that conversation.
Well, and that's a good thing. It's something I wanted to talk about, especially with women, is women try to be a martyr. And more times than not, I talk to women, and I talk to women all the time that have been diagnosed, are diagnosed, or have someone in their family. And what they want to do, their biggest goal after their diagnosis is to keep the family stable and everything normal. And I think that is a huge disservice to the mom, to the wife, because when you tell children everything's going to be fine, they worry, but they go on about their lives and they continue to say, bring me some socks. I need poster board for tomorrow, or can you do that? And that's a disservice to the mom. I think they don't want to draw attention to themselves. They don't want to upset the family unit. They don't want to upset their children. They don't want to traumatize anyone. But on the other hand, if you're not going to receive attention and care and love now, then when?
Yeah.
And children need to learn that too, that let's jump in. We're part of a family. What's my contribution, you know, as an 11-year-old? I can help my mom clean the kitchen. I can help my, rather than the mom saying everything's fine and then ending up resentful and frustrated.
Wow, that's a really good point. I actually never thought of it like that.
Oh, sure. There's a
lot. You must be really good at what you do.
There's a lot of angry, resentful moms out there, because while they're saying everything's going to be fine, mommy's strong, mommy's this, mommy's that, everybody then believes you. And you get what you ask for.
Right. No, it makes a lot of sense. And so it's obvious that a cancer diagnosis can bring anxiety, depression, dark days, whatever you want to call it. I know personally, I developed anxiety after just a few months of my initial diagnosis, never having it before. So it was like, ooh, like slapped me right across the face. Had no idea, you know, how to handle it. Had no tools. Thank God for therapy. I'm a huge advocate for therapy. Mm-hmm. And I assume that the anxiety developed from lack of control and just like that constant worry, but also just the consistent scans and just everything that can come with, you know, early stage or late stage breast cancer. So, Mary, what can you tell us about anxiety and depression developing from a breast cancer diagnosis? And what might be some coping techniques that you can share with our listeners to help ease this burden? Or even if they're not the ones with the diagnosis, understand the burden that their loved ones might be experiencing?
Oh, that's good. So, I think along with the list that you just gave of anxiety provoking aspects of a diagnosis is, let's not forget the relationship with your spouse, how that's going to change. There's a lot of, you know, what about sex? A lot of people want to know about that. Now his needs aren't being met. What do I need to do? The anxiety that he's going to be burdened by it. How about money? Listen, insurance covers a lot, but it doesn't cover all of the necessities that you need. The extra Benadryl, the special shampoo, the time off work, it's endless. And so anxiety, I think, is hand in hand with any kind of health diagnosis. I think a good coping skills in going through treatment, number one is self-care. That's the perfect time for an abundance of self-care. And that could mean taking time to read your book, to take walks, to eat healthy food, to meditate. I think a lot of people get a lot of benefits from meditation and better insight and calmness from meditation. Counseling, I think having a counselor, support groups. Women helping other women is what got me through this. You know, so many women were texting me and calling me and checking in on me. And that just meant the world, because I found my people at the time. So that was super helpful. Again, honest communication with your family. Don't try to be a hero. If you're vulnerable and you're tired and you're sick and you need help, you have to ask for it. Otherwise, people are going to, just like any matriarch of the family, they're going to go, she's going to be fine. She's so strong. And so honesty, resentment and frustration is certainly not something that you want to live with on top of all of the anxiety, the depression, because what if I don't survive this? What will happen to my children? The mind can take you on mm-hmm. such a spiraling journey
sure
when
can.
You sit alone in a room by yourself and just let it go. And so you need to be aware when you start to spiral, I need for you to say, stop. This isn't something that's in my control right now. What can I do to distract myself? And, you know, take a walk, go talk to your children, play with your dog, splash water on your face, watch some TikToks. Those are always funny and distracting. You know, go get something to eat. There's ways to distract yourself rather than indulge in that anxiety or that depression spiral, for sure.
Yeah, you know, that makes total sense.
You have to be proactive, because if you don't, it can, the darkness can overcome you.
It's a scary thought, but it happens time and time again.
Well, how could it not? You look at what you're dealing with, and your mind wants to go into survival mode. We all have caveman brains, right? It wants to go into survival mode. And that's going to be a spiral of what ifs, what will happen, what has happened, what will people think? It's a whole thing. That you have to fight. That takes discipline and parenting yourself to say, we don't do that. That's not helpful. It's not productive. Bring it back. What can I be grateful for?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And a lot of the things that you've listed, I'm proud to say that I take on regularly. And I really do think that that's what has made such a big impact on my mental health today.
I mean,
just like getting out of that negative headspace, it really can consume you. Brittany and I have talked on this podcast for like broken records over and over again. We're just talking about that negative headspace and not freaking out about certain things that are not in your control. It's kind of what I live my life by at this point. And it truly makes a difference. So I'm appreciative. I like Brittany and I say it so much, but it's such a refreshing thing to hear it from you and to hear it from somebody else joining us on this podcast, because it really does work and it really does make a significant difference.
Listen, you're not alone, especially in Charlotte. If you have listeners in Charlotte, I'm guessing primarily the Pink House, they'll hook you up with a mentor if you don't have one.
Oh yeah.
But like you and I just happen to be social people and took up a conversation and were able to support each other, you know, through that thing. In fact, we met a few other people that were lovely to talk to, and nurses, you know, Joanne, if you just reach out and ask for help, there is help there to be able to support you through this. You're not alone, I guess is the message.
Yes. And that's the biggest takeaway that I really hope people get after listening to this, that you're not alone. Even if you're sitting here and you're listening and you don't feel like you have a support system, well, you have me and now you have Mary. And when I tell you, Mary will become a best friend.
She's the
absolute best, and she's a people person. And I mean, Mary came to my wedding.
Yeah.
And like, she has been my hype woman for as long as I can remember. So everybody needs a Mary in their corner.
I'd love to do it. It's my pleasure.
Okay. So the next question that I have for you is a more positive question. So after temporary treatment, you, my friend, have been in remission for quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. You're undergoing your annual checkup scans. What has life after breast cancer been like for you?
You know, It changed my life in ways that I was able to see frustrations that weren't necessary, that how I was getting in my own way in life. There's nothing like a threat to your life that'll bring about insight and perspective. So I appreciate things more. I'm more grateful for things. I am so happy and don't take for granted at all that I'm, you know, still here. And so it's been eye-opening, and, you know, I'm just happy that I was able to move past it, and my heart just breaks for people that have to deal with this on a regular basis like yourself.
My diagnosis doesn't feel like a burden anymore, and I'm in a really good place, and I think I put in the work, and I've put in the time, and I've put in the energy. This is actually a funny story for you. I am finally going to have plastic surgery done on the left breast now that I'm in a good place. And I went and met with a plastic surgeon. And he looks in my file and he says to me, "Oh my goodness, only 33 years old. I'm so sorry for you." And I looked at him and I said, "Don't you be sorry for me." I said, "This was all just a part of God's plan. I am exactly where I always was supposed to be. I have a positive outlook on life. I'm stronger than I've ever been before. I'm probably in a better place now than I was prior to my diagnosis." And I just quickly hushed him and said, "There is absolutely no reason to feel sorry for me whatsoever, because there's a very slight chance that I have more of a brighter, positive outlook on life than you, as the plastic surgeon, will ever have."
Mm-hmm. I get that. I totally get what you're saying when you say that.
And so some people might look at me like I am freaking crazy, but I'm like, as of right now, I'm living the good life. And so we both seem to be in very good places in life right now, Mary.
Oh Lord, let's knock on some wood now.
So what advice would you give a breast cancer survivor such as yourself, who underwent chemo, surgery, radiation, you know, followed by ringing the bell, solidifying the finish line, versus, you know, somebody like me, who's an MBC thriver, whose treatment journey will continue on for the rest of their life?
Well, I think both the similarities with both of those scenarios is that you're always aware that that yearly scan could be a bad one. So there's a lot of triggers too that I think need to be processed. Hearing about another diagnosis always sends my heart just up into my throat. But I get involved, and that takes the fear away, or at least lowers the fear. Because once I can get involved, I can get more in control of something.
Right.
You know, I'm not just standing by idly watching something helplessly. I get involved like you, you know, and it gives you a more empowerment, in my opinion, it does.
No, it absolutely does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to help other women that are going through it and to answer. They ask me all kinds of questions that I even forget. I even, you know, ask myself, like, I got one yesterday. "Was your skin really dry when you went through chemo?" And, you know, honestly, I couldn't remember. But I'm guessing it was, because, you know, chemo is pretty nasty. So that had to have gone along with it.
But just the fact that they're looking for you for answers, like they're putting a little bit of their faith in you, you know, because they know that you have been through it.
Right. But it takes the powerless feeling and it makes it powerful. So that's the biggest thing, I think, that to escape that helpless feeling that can creep in. But to, you know, the gratitude, that's just so important. The positive mentality, there's tons of studies and data on positive attitudes versus negative attitudes in regards to mental health and physical health, physical well-being. I wrote my dissertation on depression and heart disease. And when you have heart disease, you're probably depressed. That's pretty bad. But you can also, with depression, create heart disease. So if you don't believe that the mind controls the body, get up and speak in front of a group of people and watch your stomach flip. Right? There's nothing wrong with your stomach. It's your brain and it's anxiety. You know, the brain is such a powerful tool in good and positive and negative ways, right? So once you get your head right, I like to say, there's so much power that you have over your physical body. I think new eating habits. I noticed that you went vegan for a while. Mm-hmm. That was hard. Good Lord, that was hard to watch.
Yeah. I don't,
that looked time consuming and expensive is what that looked like.
That was the hardest 3.5 months of my life.
Yeah. You know, but you start to make better choices, and then relationships, they become valuable, and you focus on them more and how precious they are to you. So you have a whole awakening in the rat race of life. It makes you stop, and you weren't going to. And in that screeching halt, you can look around and see how you can make differences, not only in your own life, but other people's lives. And I think that's the gift. Now, for the journey that you're on, I turn the question back to you. How do you do it? Because I can't imagine not having a mountain, climbing it and saying, "Okay, another one down. Let's move on to the next thing."
You know, it's funny that you say that because I, honest to God, I feel like I'm on the top.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And I feel like there's no looking down. I feel like I've climbed and I'm sticking to the top right now. I am so unbelievably proud of where I am today. And I know that I have God in my corner, and I know that there's a reason why I'm still here, and there's a reason why I'm experiencing as much growth as I am to this day. And as of right now, I truly do believe I'm sitting at the top. I'm parking at the top. I'm going to have a beer at the top. And we're going to have that beer together soon.
Listen, that
at the top of that mountain.
That mind over body thing. Listen, there's, you know, all kinds of books on it. One that comes to mind is called The Secret, right? Where you manifest things into being. And yes. I truly believe that positive thinking can literally change your life.
Yep. And that's exactly where I'm at right now.
That's great. That's a great mental headspace.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, listen, I just want to say thank you for joining us today. You provided such a beautiful outlook on things. And there's nothing like, you know, some free knowledge you've given. And, you know, the truth is, like, anybody can be diagnosed with breast cancer. It doesn't matter if you're a psychologist who has all the proper tools for mental health or not. But your friendship, it means the absolute world to me. I love you so much. And thank you again for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Guys, wasn't Mary amazing? I can't tell you how many times she's supported me along the way. She has always been my hype woman. I hope that you have a lot of takeaways from today's episode, and I hope that you leave this episode remembering that you are not alone. Even if you don't have breast cancer, but you're struggling with mental health, please know that you're not alone. People face mental health struggles every single day, and I honest to God don't know where I would be without my therapist. So if you've been on the fence on whether or not you should seek therapy, this is your sign to go and just do it already. I promise you, you will not regret it. We all just need to be each other's hype women. It only gets better from here. So one other thing that I do want to discuss before I close out is I know that we've been discussing a lot on our emotional well-being. I wanted to take a few minutes to also discuss and provide certain breast cancer nonprofits that strive to help eliminate emotional stress, but by relieving you of short-term financial burdens while undergoing treatment. I know Mary was even mentioning, you know, that can really take a toll, not only yourself, but like maybe even your relationship. Like the finances get really hard when you're first diagnosed. So the thought behind it is a breast cancer diagnosis is stressful enough. So you shouldn't have to also stress about how you're going to pay for additional things like treatments or transportation to and from the treatment center, house bills, groceries, I mean, whatever it may be. So these nonprofits want you to be able to focus on yourself and not necessarily the finances that can be such a burden. So again, this can be rent, mortgage, car payments, groceries, insurance premiums, utilities. I've literally seen it all. These nonprofits, depending on if they have funds, you always want to go and check out their website. They can alleviate this financial stress and provide you with this short-term financial assistance. So I'm going to list a few on today's episode for you. But please be aware, you can find all of these on Google. Some are located all around the country, but will actually assist nationally. Like I know that there's one that I just read about that's located in New York. And I know somebody here in Charlotte, North Carolina, that was actually able to get financial assistance. So just because you see a different state doesn't mean that they're not able or willing to help. And then of course, there are some that will only assist on a state-by-state basis. So here's just a few. There's the United Breast Cancer Fund. Oh, this is the one. It's based out of Huntington, New York, but it assists nationally. Life Beyond Breast Cancer. This grant actually assists those that are either in remission from early stage or, you know, receiving those no evidence of disease scans. There's Cancer Care, there's Pretty in Pink, the Pink Fund, Remember Betty, Hope Abounds. Susan G. Komen will do financial assistance. I mean, there are so many. It's quite actually amazing. I like these nonprofits inspire me to want to do and be better. So guys, don't hesitate to look into it. You definitely will not regret it. So as always, thank you so much for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Living Our Breast Lives, where we will share podcast updates, special dates, educational resources, and of course, health updates for those following our MBC journeys. Have questions, comments, or anything else you would like answered on our podcast? Send us a message on Instagram. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And as always, choose kindness. Someone may look fine on the outside, but you never know who's actually struggling on the inside. Until next time, don't forget to live your breast lives. God bless, and thanks everyone. Thank you.